This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
We're back with another episode of the Fenway Rundown podcast. We were pleased to have Joe Castiglione on yesterday. Really enjoyed that. Hope you did too. Today it's just me, Chris Cotillo, along with Sean McAdam. No guest. Hate to disappoint after a great one like Joe. But we are going to do a mailbag episode. We have fun with these. This is as we really, I guess, just enjoy, you know, interacting with the readers and the listeners. We do that in a different way now than we used to. Twitter and X questions are out, and insider text questions are in. We do this plug at the beginning of every show, but it's more fitting, I think, on one of these because it's the actual system we use to take these questions. So Sean will explain to you now how we got these questions we're about to answer and how you can sign up and ask us for the next one.
Join us to help drive Elon Musk out of business and join Red Sox Insider Text. Chris, it's a great time. It's an opportunity for Red Sox fans to be up to date in the winter and spring training all through next season. You can text us your questions and opinions, and we will respond directly to you. It's a simple procedure, and it's affordable. It's free for 14 days. It's $4.99 a month after that. And you get an opportunity to submit questions on podcasts like today's episode. And to do all of that, all you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257. Click the link and subscribe today. It's a lot of fun. Great time of the year to do it. Come join us. The water's fine.
So I see 37 questions in front of me from subscribers. I will issue this short warning before we get going. Number one, if we click the questions in the queue before we record, they go away and they're impossible to find, which is an interesting little difficulty. So, therefore, I don't read them beforehand. The element of surprise, as you said, before we started rolling. Second thing is, we are unlikely to get to all 37 because, for two reasons. Number one, there's a lot of overlap. A lot of you are asking about Yamamoto. A lot of you are asking about starting pitching, the same types of questions. And so, you know, if you hear a question similar to yours, I might not cite you as the person who asked it, but, you know, we appreciate it anyway. We're going to try to get to as many as possible. But as this thing grows and we get more subscribers, it's going to be tough. And I don't know if we are going to want to do hour and 15 minute, hour and a half mailbag episodes as fun as that would be. So let's get started.
Spoiler alert. No, we will not.
Spoiler alert. We're not. So we're going to get into it. There are obviously a few different things that people want to talk about. The big one is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Sean, we know the Red Sox are meeting with him in Los Angeles this week. Nick B., one of many people asking about Yamamoto. Late yesterday, Lou Maloney and Jared Carrabba stated on Twitter they were slightly more optimistic regarding the chances with Yamamoto. Do you have any idea what they might be referring to? Plenty of other people asking more generally, you know, how we feel their chances are there.
Well, I'll say this. The very fact that the Red Sox got a meeting, I mean, and maybe we're lowering the bar here, but the fact that they are seeking an audience with him suggests that they are willing to pay the going rate or at least be in the neighborhood. And to me, that's a good sign because I think a lot of people are starting to worry. Are they trying to do this on the cheap? Are they looking for Lugo-like free agents rather than top-of-the-market guys? And the fact that they know that the speculation is that Yamamoto is going to get north of $200 million and, in fact, potentially around $300 million, and the Red Sox are still in, that they haven't withdrawn, they haven't said, no, we're not going to spend that much. To me, that's a good sign. What happens from here on out, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know. They're up against the other heavyweights in the game. The Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, teams that are dead serious about spending. So, as I said, I think all we can deduce right now is that the Red Sox know the going rate, basically, and have said, that's fine with us. I'd say that's a good sign. We don't know much more.
Peter Thibault and Steve Mulvey both asking questions about Yamamoto.
Tebow. Peter Tebow.
Okay, well, cousin of Tim?
Yes.
Good.
Even though it's spelled differently.
Yes, of course. They both asked about kind of the logistics of the meeting. We don't know that. I'm assuming it's in L.A. because that's where other teams have been meeting with him. The Yankees sent out Hal Steinbrenner, Aaron Boone, their pitching coach Matt Blake, and Brian Cashman. A similar Red Sox group would be Sam Kennedy, Craig Breslow, Andrew Bailey, and Alex Cora. We haven't been able to confirm any of those guys are in L.A., but the expectation is that, you know, if they're going to have that meeting, they'll go full throttle. Not sure if they're entertaining, you know, bringing any players or having anybody else involved. The Red Sox obviously have Masataka Yoshida, a former teammate of Yamamoto, in the organization already. A couple of the questions here were, you know, is Yamamoto their number one target? I think he's the number one target of everybody looking for pitching right now. And I think the other guys, Montgomery, Snell, whoever it might be, have to wait until he signs, which is going to be obviously before January 4th. And according to reports, before Christmas. So he's the number one guy for everybody. And we've talked about the teams that are in, the Mets, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Giants, the Blue Jays. It's a lot of teams with a lot of money. And so therefore, you know, the market's going to get pretty steep pretty quick.
Yeah. Again, we could sit here and say that we can project something and that we can predict what's going to happen. The fact is we can't. We know that there are a half dozen or more, mostly big market teams prepared to go to the top of the scale for this guy. And it would not surprise me if that number hit over $300 million, particularly when you add in the posting fee, which has to be taken into account. But there's so much to like about this guy. The fact that he's 25 years old, that he comes with no compensation attached, the fact that he's been healthy, that he's been dominant, that he has a real competitive streak and wants to come over and be great at the major league level. Those are all positives. Now it's just a matter of a poker game, because this is a little different than a standard free agent negotiation. This is not, you know, okay, time to put your best offer in, or we have X amount guaranteed from another team. Can you top that? It may not be that kind of process. It may be you submit your offer when you meet with him and they sit back at the end and open them all up and determine which way they're going. Hard to know exactly, but it is a little different in the dynamic of the negotiations than you'd have with a major league free agent.
I've texted his agent, Joel Wolf, twice. He has not responded. So they're keeping things a little bit under wraps, also trying people with the Red Sox. And, you know, they have not even admitted or acknowledged in any interest. Mark Feinstein had the anonymously sourced report. Obviously correct that the Red Sox are out there for the meeting. Chris Connor, very easy name to pronounce, Sean. I got that one right. And a Chris C to boot. Top tier free agency is over except for Yamamoto, Snell, and Imanaga. I give the Red Sox about a 5-10% chance at landing one of them. Where are they going to magically come up with two starters, one of which should be at the front of the rotation? We've said, you've reported, I've thought, this frontline guy might come from a trade. You know, we know that the rentals are probably not the most likely, but going out and getting, and I say this name on every pod, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, one of those guys in Seattle, someone in that realm, I think that might make sense as your number one, your number two going forward. The trade market has not moved at all. We've seen none of these guys as we record this. It seems like it's heating up with the Dodgers. Glasnow still on the board. Cease, Bieber, all these types of guys that, you know, are rumored Corbin Burns to be on the market. Nothing has really moved. And so, you know, the trade avenue is still alive. The free agent avenue is alive as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to assign a percentage to their chances because I think that's impossible to handicap. We're not in the room. We're not sure of how aggressive they're going to be, although we noted at the beginning, if they're in on these meetings, they clearly understand the general parameters and the neighborhood they have to get into financially. So to say, oh, they have a 5%, a 20%, a 50%, I think anybody who's kidding themselves. And I get a big kick sometimes out of some of the tweets we see either from national guys or so-and-so is the favorite. How do we know this when, you know, most of the teams, at least half the teams haven't met with him yet? We don't know if bids have been submitted. We can deduce from some reporting how invested teams are and how much of a priority they're making of this guy. But I think we have to kind of watch it unfold. And as you say, you know, the notion that if they don't get Yamamoto, that they're in big trouble, that's a stretch. I don't think they're going to be aggressive on Snell because of the draft pick. And it may be, as you suggest, that if they miss out on Yamamoto, then their best the best pitching acquisition comes via trade, and they get a second level guy in free agency.
You know, I think Red Sox fans, and they're, I think, conditioned to this because of the way the last couple off seasons have gone, have already gotten to the point where they don't think the Red Sox are going to get these guys, and they've just decided that they're not. Like, Yamamoto's already a Yankee in the minds of some, and Snell's already gone, and they're not going to make a trade, and the rotation's going to be Sale, Bayo, Yumi, and Chris Smith. Like, I think that's how people look at it right now. There's a ton of offseason left. You know, I'm not going to judge it in full until the end, and I think that's the fair way to go. Chris also asked another question, moving kind of quickly here. Where's the big right-handed bat coming from to protect Devers and Casas? The way I'd answer that would be there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of room for that, because Tyler O'Neill, kind of in my mind, I think we haven't talked about this much on the pod, seems to be their final outfield addition. I think their outfield picture, barring a trade where they trade somebody like Rafaela or Abreu for a pitcher, seems like they're set there. And so, you know, I think that's actually a smarter move than giving 4 years to Teoscar Hernandez or Jorge Soler or Lourdes Gurriel or one of these guys, just because they have so much outfield talent and so much young outfield talent. Sean, I think that big right-handed bat either comes in the form of a second baseman like Whit Merrifield or a DH, but if not, it just makes for a huge role in the lineup for Trevor Story in 2024.
Yeah, I agree. I think Story's the guy that ultimately, as they're presently constituted, could be the guy who goes in between those two lefties for some balance. I asked this question of Craig Breslow in his suite last week at the winter meetings. You know, do you see the need for a guy to hit between those two lefties, meaning Casas and Devers? And I took his answer to be essentially, it would be nice, but I'm not sure we have that luxury. And I think that gets back to, where does that righty bat play? It's not likely to be Tyler O'Neill, a guy who's had, you know, had a terrific season in 21, but that seems something of an outlier. If they get a Merrifield or a Drury or a Polanco to play second, that's a good right-handed bat, but it's not necessarily a, you know, hitting third or fourth in the lineup kind of bat. So I think it's Story that ultimately breaks up those two, and then you have solid players at some other positions, but not that real game-changing right-handed bat. I think that went out the window when they dismissed any notion of a full-time DH, because then you could have brought Turner back, added Soler as the DH, really focused on a big thumper to, you know, fill the DH role for 130 plus games. But it's clear that that's not their preference, and they're going to roll guys through there.
Three guys with kind of similar questions back to the pitching market: PJ, Jeff, and Jim. PJ asking, why haven't they gotten any big time pitchers yet? Jeff asking, who's their plan B if no Yamamoto? And Jim asking why we haven't heard much recently on Jordan Montgomery. I'll say kind of the same we just talked about. Yamamoto is the focus for every team. The teams are going through that process. It was Ohtani, now it's Yamamoto. I think there's a very clear pecking order this winter with teams wanting to spend money on certain guys. You know, in the case of Yamamoto, he wanted to probably wait for the Ohtani losers. In this case, he has the Giants and the Blue Jays who are meeting with him and have some money to spend. I think Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell and those guys would be smart to do the same. Whatever team doesn't land, or whichever teams don't land Yamamoto, are going to be teams with money to spend on pitching. I still think Montgomery is a fit here, and I still think that they will, you know, talk to him if they don't land Yamamoto, and that he's a guy that things are seem to be quiet right now, but still very much in the mix.
Yeah, there is a domino effect here where, you know, in a particular class, whether it be free agent starters or outfielders or right-handed bats or whatever, however you want to measure it, there, you know, some guys are held hostage by the dominant figure in that class. And in this case, Yamamoto is holding up a lot of the pitching decisions by other free agents. And also, as you noted, kind of put trade talks on the back burner while teams explore free agent solutions.
David Lee, Joe T, and a couple of others asking kind of similar questions about big picture Red Sox stuff. David putting it this way, are we in bloom phase two? It sure looks that way. We're shopping in the bargain basement again. Joe T., no last name, but a cousin of Mr. T., apparently. What has changed other than a different Yale grad in charge to give me any hope that something other than last place is in store for 2024? Now, a few thoughts on this. And again, it's December 13th. Pitchers and catchers report around February 13th, so there's still 2 months to paint this complete picture. The similarities in how this offseason have gone so far, I think there are a lot compared to Chaim Bloom's offseasons, where waiting out the market, not making the first move, working around the edges, seeing, you know, if they can get a bargain, those types of things. I don't think we can judge Craig Breslow's first winter until Yamamoto, Montgomery, some of these guys are off the board, but in the way he's approaching roster building, in the way he's focused on, you know, finding the diamond in the rough so far, I do think there are some similarities. And I think the big picture question we need to start asking ourselves, Sean, you know, and start asking the team if they allow it, because we don't have access again to those guys. There's my every podcast complaint about John Henry, is where's the budget? If they don't go and they don't go for these guys, if they don't get a Yamamoto, if they don't get a Montgomery, and they don't have a big budget again, at some point, you got to start pointing the finger at ownership. I don't think we're there yet, but so far, I think fans are starting to get restless again.
Yeah, and we understand that frustration when Tom Warner comes out the day that Craig Breslow is introduced and say that we're going full throttle. That amps up expectations. Fans hear that and make and translate into, okay, they're ready to spend. They're ready to go after the big guys. The problem is, other than Ohtani, there really haven't been a lot of big guys who have come off the board. I would say, in fact, as it relates to the Red Sox, there's been exactly one, Aaron Nola with the Phillies. I think that would have been a good signing here, even if it's worth the draft pick. That's a guy who's proven he can be a front of the rotation guy, who can eat a lot of innings, who's durable, who has pitched in a big market, had some postseason success. Checks all the boxes. They were not in on him meaningfully, as has been reported. That's a disappointment. Ohtani's a different class. He's not going to pitch in 24, so he didn't address any of those short-term needs. And I think most Red Sox fans accepted going into the winter that he was not on the Red Sox radar in any significant way. So we're talking about Aaron Nola and, to a lesser extent, Seth Lugo signing yesterday with Kansas City. Chris, you and I talked and kind of laughed about the fact that if they had, you know, because they didn't sign Lugo, the reaction is, oh, so now we're losing guys to the Kansas City Royals. And if they had signed Lugo, then it's like, oh, we're spending $45 million on a guy who didn't start until last year. Right. So it's sort of a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation. I understand the frustration, but this is a game of musical chairs. And so far, nobody has been seated. If in late January, the Red Sox are the team walking around the chairs and every other team has one, then you're entitled to go off. And I think you should, but we're not there yet. We're not close to there yet.
And I'll mention something on the whole Interest Kings moniker, which I think has taken over the last couple of years, because, you know, dating back a couple off seasons, now the Red Sox are quote unquote in on everyone, but don't land that many guys. I think there's a few reasons for that. Number one, there's more coverage of the Red Sox than a lot of other teams. There's more reporters digging with their contacts to see what the Red Sox are trying to do. And so therefore their name surfaces a little bit more. I think that's just a logistical thing. Part two of that, which is probably even more important, agents are more eager to say the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Mets, these big market teams are in on their clients to drive up the price. It's a tale as old as time. The Red Sox might not be that, you know, huge behemoth big market team they used to be, or they're not acting like it. But, you know, if the Yankees are in on a guy and they see the Red Sox are in, you know, it might push up the price, things like that. And so that's very real in negotiations. We've seen that as well.
I would add the proliferation of social media too, because there's more speculation. There's more reporting from different outlets, even media that aren't credentialed. You have blogs weighing in on, oh, I heard this about the Red Sox and they're bidding or they're not bidding. So there's more reporting out there. And, you know, this sense that They get linked with a lot of guys, but don't come up with many. The fact is, this happens every winter with a lot of teams that you you cast a wide net here. You try in a number of guys, but you're only going to get a percentage of them. And this perception becomes widespread that they're not ready to spend or they're not being aggressive enough. And that may not necessarily be true, at least this winter.
And you know what? Every team is in on everybody, especially when you have the resources the Red Sox theoretically have. They're in on everybody who could fit their roster. They talk to every agent. They talk to trade possibilities, all that type of stuff. Red Sox just sent out a press release. They have signed Cooper Criswell. That broke late last night, right-handed pitcher from the Rays. And most importantly, a product of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, joining a long list of Tar Heels.
That's the important part.
Red Sox, Tar Heels, Daniel Bard, Andrew Miller, Scott Bankhead, Trevor Kelly, and the list goes on and on. All right, back to the questions. Pete W. and Adam Shapiro asking similar ones about the farm system as we start rolling here. Which of the minor league guys do the Red Sox see as MLB building blocks? Obviously Meyer and Teal, but which of the Anthony Blythe and York group? Could Blaze Jordan be on that group? Pete asking, where do you stand on trading away the top three prospects in the farm system? Anthony, Meyer, and Teal. We've touched on this before. It's going to take a lot to get those guys, but it might take one of those guys to get the starting pitcher they're looking for. To me, all the hype around Anthony, everything with him, his rise, and kind of the complete package of a player he is, makes me think he's probably close to untouchable. At catcher, it's very hard to find a star or a projected star. Kyle Teal is that. They obviously were very thrilled to get him in the draft. Meyer, I think we put in a different boat at this point just because they have Trevor Story at shortstop for the next 4 years. They have some other middle infield prospects. We know they've drafted a high school shortstop in the first round every year for the last 30, other than Teal. So Meyer, to me, out of that group, I think is the one that I could see them moving. I know that seems crazy considering how much hype there's been around this guy the last couple of years. But it might be what it takes. And I think that, you know, the two of us on this show and definitely some other people who cover the team are kind of coming around to the idea that he is a guy that no longer is untouchable.
Yeah, I too would put Teal at the top of that trio because of the position he plays and the opportunity to get a potential frontline catcher who could be your starter for the next decade and be your number one catcher as soon as 2025, which I think is internally kind of the projection. To me, he stands apart. I think they would move either Anthony or Meyer for the right deal. And for the right deal, we mean a guy with three or more years of control and a guy that really could anchor the rotation for that period. It would take a lot to induce the Red Sox to include one of those guys in a trade. But I think you're at a point now where if you lose out on Yamamoto and the other free agents are somewhat less appealing or don't rise to that level of front of the rotation starter, then you have to find that piece somewhere. And it may include giving up one of the real top free agents. I would put, you know, I think those three guys are alone at the top of the pyramid here. And then you have, you have guys like Gonzalez and York and Blaze and others that
Rafaela,
who are not quite as elite. And in the case of the young pitchers in particular, Gonzalez and Pareles, they're going to take some time. So it's hard to project what an 18 or 19 year old is going to do at the big league level. But those three guys, Teal, Meyer, and Anthony, are atop the food chain here. And I see Teal as the guy that almost under no circumstances would they give up.
Yeah, agreed there. We'll go through some quickly here, some quick ones that which we try to knock off. Again, appreciate all the questions on the Insider text chain. Mark DeMellon, frequent contributor to the subscriber conversation. What are your revised predictions on which starting pitchers the Red Sox will acquire this offseason? My guess here, Kirby and Giolito. That's what I'm going to go with, Sean.
I'm going to say Montgomery and then a name that has not surfaced in trade talks. And I'm not about to drop that name because I don't have it. I think it's just somebody that maybe we didn't think would be made available, or somebody that the Red Sox might not pursue. So I say Montgomery and an unidentified second level guy to join that rotation through a trade.
Frank Prinsky asking a question about a guy we've not talked about in a long time. Adalberto Mondesi, he says, I was hoping he might be convinced into signing a minor league deal just in case he ever got healthy and showed some of the upside he supposedly has. Any word on his possible future? There hasn't been. I agree that, you know, a guy in that boat who missed a whole season and knows the rehab structure in Fort Myers, knows the organization, seems like a candidate to return. And if there is upside there, the Red Sox might as well do it because they're familiar with the player. They were clearly interested in him a year ago. But no, he is not signed yet. Ian Taylor asking this, and I'll let you answer kind of in rapid fire prediction fashion. Who is the most likely second baseman for the Red Sox next year?
I'm going to say it's somebody they get in a trade. You know, whether it's Drury or Polanco, I don't see Merrifield as being the ultimate solution. I think Breslow has said that it was more likely they would trade for a second baseman. That to me indicated that he wasn't thrilled with what he saw in the free agent market. So I'm going to say trade.
This question comes from Daryl Genetti. If the Red Sox don't sign a pitcher between now and FanFest, will ownership make it out alive? I think someone actually pointed out yesterday that on winter weekend, it no longer says there's a town hall for Friday night, as there has been in previous years. And now it says there is a welcome event. Last year was not a very warm welcome event. I was not there. But I saw the clips. So that, I think, is a little bit interesting. Do you feel like that actually had an impact on them, or that was a scarring moment for the organization, the boos they got in Springfield a year ago?
Well, I think it had to be a wake-up call for ownership. We saw Heim Bloom tried to, you know, mollify everyone with his little speech. That didn't go particularly well. But if John Henry was unsure of how he was going to be received, he got a rude awakening, literally. And my guess is that given that kind of reception, and look, I am not questioning fans' right to express their displeasure. So I'm not saying, I hope you're happy you scared John Henry back into his office. But I think that is ultimately the outcome here. I'd be surprised, frankly, if Henry put himself out there in that forum again.
Dan Lazinsk and Bill Crawford both asking about Shota Imanaga, kind of the secondary Japanese pitcher available, a guy that is probably also someone who's going to take a little while to sign because it is Yamamoto or bust for a lot of teams right now. Sean, what do you know about this player and the Red Sox rumored interest in him?
Yeah, I actually had a scouting report in my MLB notebook a few weeks ago from someone who has seen a decent amount of him. And, you know, kind of projected him as a middle to maybe number four starter with some upside. The stuff is not as elite as it is with Yamamoto, but there are a couple of quality pitches in his repertoire. A little bit more of a gamble, I would say, because he hasn't been, as I noted, as dominant as Yamamoto has been at the Japanese level. But we've seen, you know, a guy like Kodai Senga come over last year and really pitch as a number two over here, maybe even a future number one. So the fact that he's not the highest rated Japanese free agent pitcher on the market doesn't mean he can't help somebody. It's just not as sexy a signing or acquisition as Yamamoto would be.
John McSheffrey asked a couple questions, a couple big picture ones that kind of touched on what we already got to. One specific one on Bobby Dalbec. Do you guys legitimately see a role for him in this team going forward? If so, what? I like Bobby, but I think he deserves a chance to battle out somewhere else where he has a better shot. I just don't get it. Just cut the charade. Seriously. What are we trying to figure out with this guy that we don't know over the last 3 years? I understand he hits the ball 500 feet, yards, whatever. I'm thinking golf. He hits the train in Worcester. Like, I am so sick of the whole, oh, is this the year? Maybe he deserves a chance. Sign Adam Duvall. get a guy that you know is going to thrive at Fenway, a legitimate major leaguer. He can play the corners other than third base. Try to slot him in at first base. You know, probably not going to get that much money, and just cut the charade with Bobby Dalbec, send him somewhere else. I was shocked to hear Gora say that he's back in the mix, and I think it would be a mistake just because, you know, again, how many times are we going to try this?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that Dalbec has yet to prove that he can hit major league pitching on a consistent basis. And it's, excuse me, it's great that he has that production to AAA. It's great that he has the versatility to play third and first, and now even the outfield that you add to his versatility. But what good is that if he's going to strike out in 40% of his at-bats up here and, you know, struggle to stay above 200 while hitting the occasional tape measure shot? I think that was perhaps Alex Cora's way of drumming up some interest on the free agent, on the trade market. I agree. It's time for a change of scenery. The guy's done all the things. He's tried to do everything the right way. It hasn't worked out here. Ship him off somewhere, put him in a deal as a secondary guy, and give him another chance.
David Barrasso with a very interesting question, I think. Well, there's a lot of talk about the big market Red Sox flexing their financial muscle in the free agent space. I see a good opportunity for them to use some of their prospect inventory to take on a big contract or two. Do you guys see anything out there, a starter or a second baseman that a team might be ready to move off of? I think the guy that if anybody fits in this boat and would be a big splash would be Fernando Tatis. Does not come without his warts, would obviously be a big name. Is there anybody to you that, you know, I'm not saying that's particularly likely, but would make any sense for the Red Sox?
That would be a big fish, certainly. And I, you know, when I hear take on a big salary, I almost start thinking about guys who have underachieved at a certain level.
Right.
And maybe, you know, you get a guy as a secondary piece in a trade so that you don't have to give up quite as much for the primary guy. Right. So in that case, you know, maybe you package somebody else with Tatis Jr. and take on that deal. I'd have to give it some thought. It's a weapon that they have in their tool bag, but they haven't shown a willingness to do it.
Jonathan Morrison, a couple of questions. One we got to already. Number two, do you guys think Cora is gone after this year and Breslow brings his own guy in? Any manager, and we've touched on this before, out there, especially one with a ring, especially one with an expiring contract, hint, hint, is very, very, very excited that Craig Counsell got the deal he did with the Cubs, is very excited that free agency for managers is now a thing, and there's going to be big market clubs who are potentially going to be in the market. You know, I've thought if the Dodgers don't win with this roster and everything they have, you'd have to think Dave Roberts has to start, you know, being on the hot seat in some way. Aaron Boone could be on the hot seat if the Yankees have another bad year. Alex Cora hits free agency with the Red Sox, Yankees, and Dodgers all after him. You know, it's going to be a bidding war, and Breslow might want to bring his own guy in at that point. So I think the possibility of Cora leaving is very, very real and something the Red Sox and Red Sox fans should have to start thinking about. Brody Ofterhide, along with a few others, I know we judge the offseason in totality, so this is premature. I like that qualifier because no one else has it. What do you expect the reaction to be when pitchers and catchers report and this team still hasn't brought in starting pitching upgrades for another year? At that point, again, I said it a few minutes ago, I'll say it again, point the finger at ownership and all the conspiracy theories that John Henry doesn't care, that they're not committed, that they're not willing to spend at the top. If that's the case this time around, I'm all in on the conspiracies.
Yeah, I think we have to wait a little bit. As we said, there is still almost 2 months before pitchers and catchers. A lot can still happen. But if they cheap out and find back of the rotation bargain guys to compete and try to sell that as full throttle, then they deserve all the anger and protests that they're going to face. But we're not there yet.
Matthew Levine, I'm telling you people, you got to give me a phonetic on some of these. What's up with LeBron? I feel like that was quickly forgotten after news dropped he was involved with FSG. Does he have any involvement with the Sox, or is it just FSG's other ventures? Still part of the ownership group, but still playing. I haven't seen him at Fenway. I don't think he's in on the day-to-day basis. He just, you know, reaps the benefits, and he's going to have to cut 1% of Yamamoto's check in a couple weeks if the Red Sox land him. Charlie Weber has two questions. Red Sox have done a lot to put themselves in position for a big splash. What's the point of no Mookie, no Xander, etc. if they don't make a big splash, and are they no longer interested in signing top-tier free agents? Again, I think proof will be in the pudding there. Yamamoto, Montgomery, some of these guys. If they don't get them, then a fair question to ask, but they are not there yet. David Gablaskis asking us this, Sean. Based on your experiences following the Red Sox and knowledge of the organizations, why have the Red Sox only been able to graduate one class of pitchers in the past 45 years? This predates me, but he lists Clemens, Hurst, Boyd, Ojeda, and Nipper as that class. 45 years of that, Sean, I know it goes back at least 10 or 15 with the inability to graduate and develop homegrown pitchers, but has this been an organizational thing for longer?
Look, they have not done a good job in developing their own homegrown starters. That's been documented. Before Bayo, you have to go back to Clay Buchholz. And there have been teams that have done a much better job of it. The Houston Astros are the most obvious example of teams that, in particular, on the international free agent market, have really done a great job developing guys like Valdez and Javier and McCullers Jr. But a lot of big market teams have struggled. The Yankees haven't done a great job developing pitching. It's been a little bit better lately with Michael King coming along, but of course he got traded for Soto.
Greg Weissert.
I don't know that I would put him quite in that category, but thank you for that. But it's funny because the Red Sox have obviously been among the best teams when it comes to developing position players. When you look at, you know, the Hall of Fame level guys that this organization has produced over the last 40 years, it has not translated to the pitching side. The hope is that Craig Breslow, along with some of the other hires, whether it's Andrew Bailey or their new director of pitching, may change that, but it's not going to happen in 24 either. That's going to take a little while for guys to cycle through the organization and then, you know, build up and develop better to the point where they can contribute at the big league level.
And I'll note that, you know, big picture, it hasn't mattered that much. I mean, obviously they won World Series, four of them, with guys that came from the outside. They got in 2004, Pedro was not homegrown by any means. Obviously they traded for Schilling. Go trade for a guy like Beckett in 2013. Those four guys they traded for, and Porcello, Sale, Eddie Rodriguez, Eovaldi, and a free agent in Price. Like, if you're a big market team, you should be able to have that backup plan right now.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter where you get them, but if you're looking to be efficient and not have to go into the free agent market and think about spending $150, $200, $300 million on the best options, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to develop your own guys and control them and maybe extend them.
Cooper Criswell is the subject line for Brad Woodhouse and his question. Breslow continues to do his best Heimblum impersonation. Again, Brad, stop criticizing. I can't remember Heimblum ever bringing in a Tar Heel. And inviting Charlie Zink to spring training. I almost fell out of my chair. Sure, he could still be throwing his knuckleball at age 44, but no, this is a 17-year-old from Columbia named Charlie Zink. How did he get his name? Can we send Cotillo down there to snoop around? I mean, I'll see what the 2024 travel budget brings before we plan more international trips than the one Red Sox in the Dominican Republic already potentially on the books. Pat Wall says, all I see is that it says this could be a fun question. When did you, this is actually a good one. A fun question. When you guys wanted to become sports reporters, more specifically in baseball? I think for me, it was, I knew I wanted to be part of the game very early. You know, for those who don't know my backstory, I was the world's most annoying high school student, going and texting agents and general managers and DMing them from an anonymous Twitter account in 2012 and 2013 as a senior in high school in Central Mass. Enough of them said yes and helped me out that I was able to break some stories. I worked for SB Nation for a few years and kind of, you know, fell into this career naturally from a hobby there on Twitter. And so I was lucky in that respect and always grew up loving the game and wanted to do it. Sean, I don't think Twitter DMs were a big part of your early career, but stone tablets might have been.
Yep. Moses parting the Red Sea. I was there for that one. Wrote the gamer on that and a post.
His first lead was on Papyrus.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, my story is not all that different. I grew up in New England as a Red Sox fan, fell in love with the game in 1967 during the Impossible Dream season. Have followed baseball and sports in general since then. Always enjoyed writing. Actually took a bit of a circuitous route to get to sports. I wrote more about music. When you were being a teenage sports writer, I was being a teenage rock critic, but fell into some other opportunities after college in sports and took that path and ended up here.
Yeah, that's a good question and definitely one we appreciate off the beaten path. Back to the Red Sox with a few more rapid fire. Joe Hrenko, at this point, is there a higher probability of the big deal this winter being an extension of one of their own guys like Bayo or Casas than in free agency? I don't think that that's going to be the headline of the offseason like it was a year ago with Devers, just because those guys, you know, are not going to get the $300, $200 million deal. I talked to people who would know at the winter meetings, no conversations with Casas, seems to be the same thing with Bayo. The expectation here is that they sit down with both of them in spring training, but you know, there's no rush on either one, so I'm not sure that, you know, they're going to try, but I don't know that anything will come together.
Yeah, it won't have that impact that you have when you have a star who's a year away from free agency and you pluck them away from the potential free agent market the way they did with Devers last winter. But I think it would be a good show of faith to the fan base that the team is going out of its way to lock up that homegrown talent and not let it get to the point where, as it did with Bogarts and Betts, they sort of painted themselves into a corner. I think they're going to make it a priority. How successful they're going to be depends on how far they're willing to take it.
Jason Parker brings up a name that I like, Rhys Hoskins, as a guy to fill Justin Turner's role, right-handed hitter with more power, could play DH, give Casas a day off at first here and there. I like it.
I don't mind it either, but it seems counter to what they have said to expect in terms of filling the DH at bats. He's played a little bit of outfield, but he's not a good outfielder. It's hard to think that they would have him part of the outfield mix, both in terms of his weakness as a defender and the number of different options they have already on the roster. And it's not like you're going to platoon Casas at first base where he sits against every lefty. So the expectation of Hoskins, you know, DHing for 120 games and playing 30-something games at first doesn't seem like it fits what they're trying to do.
Joseph Gleason with a similar question, but about Justin Turner. Why not re-sign Turner and let him split time between DH and first? He should be able to handle that if he's 100% healthy. I think the years stack up at a certain point in your career. We saw last year he was not good at first base. I know the injury played a big role toward the end, but I don't think the Red Sox view him as a platoon partner there, and they don't want a limited DH, to answer that question kind of clearly. Only a couple more here. Paul Manish asked a pretty specific one on Jamie Westbrook, the guy they signed a minor league deal over the week. Guy who's bounced around with a lot of minor league teams. Never played in the majors, had a pretty good year at AAA with the Yankees last year. Any chance he'll be in the mix at second base? Have a hard time seeing that. I still think that they are going to go out and get somebody legit, whether that be Brandon Drury or, you know, whoever that might be. A couple questions about Shohei Ohtani and the deferrals, and if it's good for baseball, we'll end there, Sean. Just your thoughts on that whole thing and the craziness that played out and what it means for the game. To me, it's a loophole. They didn't break any rules. They still have to pay all the money. Any team could have done it. The Giants were willing to do it. Sounds like, you know, the Blue Jays were going to be willing to do it if they needed to. So a whole up in arms thing to me kind of falls short.
Yeah, I don't think this is the ruination of baseball because the Dodgers won a big free agent, or that they found a creative way for the accounting. As you noted, there were other teams willing to do it too. There's nothing in the CBA against it. Should there be down the road, we'll worry about that later. But for now, it was certainly within the rules, and the Dodgers took advantage.
That was about 37 questions and probably about 37 minutes, obviously going fast. If we missed yours, We apologize, but again, there was a lot of overlap. There's only so much you can ask when the Red Sox biggest offseason addition to this point has been Tyler O'Neill. But again, appreciate all the questions. Appreciate all the subscribers. You know, we've had fun with that program. Sean, one more time, for mailbags and for other things, where can people subscribe and get a chance to text us about the Red Sox?
Yep. For an opportunity to contribute to the next mailbag podcast we do, or just to get up-to-date information round the clock all year round on the Red Sox, join the Insider Text Program. Text JOIN to 617-751-6257, then click the link and subscribe today. 14-day free trial period, $4.99 a month thereafter. Get you right to the head of the line, get you up to date on everything the Red Sox are doing, and a chance to communicate, however you see this, as with Chris Cotillo, with Chris Smith, and me.
One more episode this week. Tomorrow on Thursday, we'll kind of talk about the latest in the Red Sox world, some of the stuff we touched on today and some other stuff. And then we're going to have to get creative with the podcast because Sean and I have different weeks off coming up. A little birdie told me during my week off next week, there's going to be one episode that is just Sean McAdam singing Christmas carols for those of you at home.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.